Eva McPherson Clayton was the first African American Congresswoman to represent North Carolina's first congressional district from 1992 to 2003. She was not only the first African American woman to represent North Carolina, she was the first African American to represent North Carolina since the beginning of the 20th century. North Carolina's first congressional district included Warren County, a rural part of North Carolina whose electorate was composed of small farmers, in addition to the controversial Soul City, which we will talk about later in this podcast. The reason I chose Eva McPherson Clayton is because, as a North Carolina native, I've had very few women of color to look up to. Congresswoman Clayton was the first woman of color that I learned about in elementary school. She was contemporary and admirable. Eva Clayton was an agent of change in a way that I had not seen when women of color participate in. And focused on the institutional level in politics as an agent of change. Her activism made me view the government and politics differently. Child, it allowed me to believe that a government can be progressive and representational of different communities. That I one day could aspire to make change through policy. Eva Clayton is currently serving as the Assistant Director General of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization in Rome, Italy. Due to this, I was unable to reach Congresswoman Clayton and therefore unable to personally interview her. Unfortunately, Eva Clayton has yet to write a book about her life. However, Eva Clayton has given various interviews that have been archived and provide important insight into her life, both as a congresswoman and an activist. In this podcast, I will be citing two interviews, one being a C-SPAN interview and the other being a PBS three-part documentary series funded by the North Carolina government. Two intensive interviews cover most, if not all, the questions that I would have personally asked Congresswoman Clayton. This podcast will include clips from various interviews that discuss her childhood and campaign, as well as her achievements in Congress that include increasing voter registration and providing and expanding the welfare system to immigrants. Even despite the barriers that women often face while campaigning and entering Congress, Eva Clayton beat the learning curve and managed to be a major leader for the Democratic Party and was successfully reelected 5 times. Before I go any further in applauding Congresswoman Clayton, I want to start by discussing her childhood. Eva Clayton was born to Josephine and Thomas McPherson on September 16, 1934, in Savannah, Georgia. Growing up, she experienced the racial limitations of the Jim Crow South. Eventually, the McPherson family moved from Savannah, Georgia, to North Carolina. Her father was an insurance salesman that rose up the ranks of his integrated insurance company. despite only achieving a sixth grade education. Her mother was a dressmaker and teacher who eventually became the superintendent for an orphanage. Her mother did not attend college, but participated in a program to receive her certification to teach. Interestingly enough, Eva Clayton remembers that her mom earned more working as a maid and dressmaker compared to her teacher salary. Her mother's job as a dressmaker exposed her to a diverse community as her mother created designs for both black and white women. Despite the institutional barriers that her parents faced and their limited education, they were able to instill in Eva and her siblings a passion for education. Among the great lessons that Eva learned from her parents, she cites,
"Well, I learned two things from my father. One, you could develop your own skills. My father had about a sixth grade education. He later got what they call a high school certification or edification, you know, but actually had about sixth grade education. He liked people, and he led by understanding people. He led by examples. He also listened to people. And if anything, I think I was able to understand that you can develop those leadership, whether you have a master's degree, as I have, or if you have a sixth grade education. So leadership comes from wanting to do and understanding that in order to get people to do, you also had to persuade them to do it. So he had the ability to engage people."
In addition to her father's lessons, as many children do, Eva Clayton looked up to her mother and cites her as a source of strength. In addition to her mother, Eva mentions other role models.
"Well, I think the first female model I have is my mother. And a very stern person who wanted the best for her daughter. As I grew older and recognized the contribution of certain, Mary McLeod Bethune was one. The high school founder where I went to high school, I went to Small Presbyterian High School, and Lucy Craft Laney was her name. I might have never knew her, but am I knowing of her? So those two persons were female models. I would say it's like the model for high school and others was neither female nor a black. It was Albert Schweitzer. You know, I wanted to be a doctor and I wanted to be a missionary. Now, it's a little arrogant to think I could be an Albert Schweitzer, who I never knew either, but I read about him. He's both a doctor, he's both a musician, a philosopher, and a missionary. And I think what also was motivation for me wanting to be a doctor was a classmate who had polio. So I thought I could grow, be a doctor, and heal her. And I looked for someone similar. And I, as I grew older, I wanted to be active and religiously in my church or any religion, and I wanted to be a missionary. I wanted to help. So I think those desires or motivations or kind of thing drove me early on to want to go to college. I majored in biology with the idea I was going to med school. Happened to me.
Clearly, education played a large role in Eva Clayton's upbringing. As many people of color experience, education is often seen as the route to improvement that allows us access to social mobility and the possibility of making change. Here are her views on education and how her parents instilled it.
They insisted that both my brother, they wanted more for us than they had.
You told a reporter once that you always knew that you were going to go to college. Mm-hmm. How did your parents instill this into you?
There was never a question that we were going. You know, growing up, obviously I grew up in a very segregated community where there were places we couldn't go. I grew up in a segregated schools, all that. The community I lived in was very segregated, although I lived next door to whites. You know, in the South, they say it's not how close you get, you just know your place. Well, I certainly, the segregation and the condition said there was a place for blacks. We understood that. But my parents, particularly my mother, who said, maybe segregated, but you can achieve even though it is segregated. Not that she accepted that. She had a vision that her kids, and I think many blacks, not just my mother, many blacks saw that as a way, education as a way to overcome what the system said you had. So there was never a doubt placed in my mind, or my brother's mind, that we would be conditioned by that. Now, we couldn't go places that they said, but for my mind, I can certainly escape that. I was better than my opposition or the political system said we were. And education was a way of refining that, that we could be what the good Lord.
Before we move on further, I want to briefly return to her childhood to discuss the Jim Crow South.
Very prominent. Couldn't go to movies. You knew a place in the restaurant that you had to eat on one side, if it was there. If I went to theater, I had to go upstairs. Obviously, I went to segregated schools. On the bus I traveled, I went to the back of the bus, or somewhere at a certain place where blacks could go. I saw it in every walk of my life. Segregation was part of that. Yes.
And I want to return to talking about education and the important role that it played. It's interesting enough that Eva Clayton always knew that she would go to college. That is rare even today in communities of color.
Mother was very pleased. My mother always knew I was going to graduate. My mother also knew I was going to go to college because she was going to see to that, right? But it was one step of achievement for my parents to go to the next step. And going to college, and she took me to college. She was very pleased to go with me to the campus to see that I was there and that. My father also was very pleased that we were there. So entering college was an achievement to a larger goal.
Eva Clayton attended Johnson C. College in Charlotte, North Carolina. And she chose this school because...
Well, again, I was encouraged that way, but also they gave me a small scholarship, and I could afford it. That's one. But beyond that, most substantively, is John C. Smith had a reputation of graduating a lot of doctors. A lot of their students who were interested in going to med school were accepted. So it had a reputation of being a good school for those who wanted to be a doctor or a dentist, but also it was affordable, and they were kind enough to give me a scholarship. And this professor I had in high school was also a graduate of Johnson C. Smith, so he advocated for it. So I had a lot of things going.
Before moving on to talking about her political career, I want to briefly discuss on how she met her life partner, since he played a major supportive role throughout her campaign and career.
My initial impression was that he was a Mr. Know-All, you know. We met as a group. A couple of my classmates who were freshmen met two seniors. And I think we were inquiring about books, and because they knew everything, right? Well, seniors always know more than freshmen, right? And they always want to impress you, right? So I met him trying to impress me and others that he knew, perhaps a little more than he knew, but anyhow, at that time I didn't. And then we would go to what we call the cafeteria, and then after he would be out waiting, and we would talk, and he would walk me to the dorm, and I found him interesting. I found him a little cocky. He just thought he knew more than he knew. I thought he was cute. I thought he was handsome, yeah. I thought he was trying to impress me.
Eventually, T.T. Clayton and Eva McPherson got married immediately following her college graduation. Her mother even made her wedding dress. Even past giving birth to her first child, Eva maintained her dream to be a doctor. Clearly, today we know how much representation matters in professional fields. So I just wanted to highlight her perspective on lack of female role models in the medical field and the limitations of fields that women have access to.
Of what you would grow up to be as a woman?
Well, a teacher, a secretary, a social worker. That's why I said, although I don't think I knew a female doctor, to be honest with you. My doctor, who was very kind to me, Dr. Adler, you know, most of the docs I knew were male. So I was out of the norm to want to be a doctor, no doubt about that. Yeah.
So how did Eva Clayton go from wanting to be a doctor to an activist and eventually a congresswoman? Undoubtedly, the civil rights movement played a big role in mobilizing Congresswoman Clayton to become active in civic and political affairs. At one point, she even picketed her husband's law firm, a law firm that was the first integrated firm in North Carolina. Eva Clayton had to give up her aspiration to become a doctor after her third child, as it no longer seemed like a feasible goal. That says a lot about motherhood and how women are expected to prioritize motherhood over their professional career. After rejecting her acceptance to med school, she began working with her husband to learn more about local politics. Eventually, in the late 1960s, Eva went with her husband to a conference to discuss the future leaders of the Democratic Party. The major issue was voter registration, as most of the black electorate was not registered to vote. When someone was asked to volunteer at the conference as a way to motivate an increase in voter registration, Eva Clayton was the only person to raise her hand. She was greatly supported by civil rights activist Vernon Jordan. Even with her limited experience, Eva won 31% of the vote in the Democratic primary, losing to incumbent Lawrence Fountain. But the goal here wasn't necessarily to win, but to increase Black voter registration. This experience motivated her enough to start attending law school. Yet, she then gave birth to her fourth and final child and had to withdraw. She now recognizes that 1968 was not the right time for her to thrive and successfully win a campaign. However, she continued to work in politics. Clayton even worked on the controversial Soul City initiative. The idea behind Soul City was to build a city for African Americans steered by Black interest and funded upfront by the federal government. In 1992, also known as the Year of the Woman, at a time after the Anita Hill trials that led to the regrettable confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. This campaign also came after the redistricting of North Carolina from the 1990 census, which created two minority districts.
Well, I was interested because I wanted to see to what extent it made an opportunity in eastern North Carolina, having run in 1968. Obviously, I was interested to see rather the kind of geographical area that I thought had the potential of enhancing a candidate to run. I was interested in the sense that I may want to be that candidate. So I had a personal interest in it, yes.
And this redistricting was connected to President Johnson's Voting Rights Act of 1965 that was a result of the civil rights movement. She entered a campaign for both a special and general election after Walter Jones Sr. retired in 1992. The general election included three other Black candidates. Yet Eva Clayton did not focus her campaign neither on race or gender, but on being the best candidate possible. This is what Eva Clayton had to say about her opponents, including Walter Jones Jr.
It was always important to recognize that Walter Jones' name was very important, and Walter Jones Jr. had developed a reputation, so it was very important to understand the significance of that. All were men, except myself. There was, at least how I perceived it, all of them were good candidates. And what I would say to them, they're all good candidates, but Eva Clayton was the best for the first. And that was my campaign slogan. You know, best for the first was Eva Clayton. And also, really, I not only said that, I believed that, but I also made a point of respecting the candidates who were running. Any one of them could have served as congresspeople, and I'm sure that any one of them would have been adequate to serve in that. I think I was the better one, the best one, And I didn't have a problem saying that, you know. And so we had a vigorous campaign.
The talk at this.
Eventually, Eva Clayton came in second with 31% of the vote compared to Walter Jones Jr., 38% of the vote. She decided to challenge Walter Jones Jr. to a runoff election, which she won on June 1992. Her campaign focused on her small farmers' electorate, education, and infrastructure, as well as housing, focusing on government projects. As we have discussed in the class, Black women face major hurdles when looking at the prospect of running for office. People of color don't always have the network to campaign, which makes fundraising extremely difficult. In addition to this, patriarchal standards make it socially unacceptable for women to ask for money, creating an additional barrier. Eva, however, refused to let this stop her and went door-to-door campaigning. In addition to her grassroots fundraising tactics, she was also funded by Emily's List, the largest PAC dedicated to in supporting pro-choice Democratic women. A couple of summers ago, I interned at Emily's List. And even today, Emily's List struggles to adequately represent and fund women of color. As she won the special election, she was able to join Congress earlier than the 1992 freshman class. Due to this, she managed to gain some experience through Walter Jones Sr. staff and seniority. The same year, Mel Watt also joined her in Congress, making this the first time in history that North Carolina was represented by two African Americans. Eva soon was elected to be the president of her freshman class, a class that also included Nancy Pelosi. When asked to share her experience as the first woman president of a freshman class, Clayton said,
"Well, it was a position of honor, but it was a position of pulling the freshmen together and communicating to the leadership. Now, I was elected president of the freshman class Democrats, and I'm sure there was a freshman class president of the Republicans. But it gave me gave us the time to gather us together and to say what our priorities were and how we wanted to be treated. So it was an entree between the freshman class and the leadership of the House. And because it was such a large class, they did listen to us an opportunity. And also, I think they wanted to find a way of integrating us into the system so we could be on, this process they call whipping. So in the structure of the Democratic Party, there's a whip. And so part of the requirement of his duties was to make sure we were all voting on the same thing that the leadership wanted. Well, part of my responsibility that the freshman class was to communicate what we saw as priority. So part of it allows me to negotiate with the leadership. That's part of the responsibility. But it helped know big. But for me, it gave me visibility. It gave me opportunity to learn my colleagues. And they also honored me by allowing me to represent them with the leadership.
Eventually, Congresswoman Clayton would earn the honors to serve on the Agriculture Committee. Throughout her time in Congress, she faced many interesting points in history, including two government shutdowns under the Clinton administration, the Clinton scandal regarding Monica Lewinsky and impeachment, as well as 9/11. She opened the evolution of women in Congress and emphasized the importance of representation at all levels, including women staffers. Here is a C-SPAN clip of her talking about the importance of representation from the ground level up.
I think the growing number of women members provide the opportunity for the women staff. Not that men wouldn't hire women, but it certainly gave a great opportunity for women to be on that. And I think once they came, people understood that they were just as competent and just as aggressive and just determined as anyone else. In fact, could be more determined than their men staff. Even I've had men to tell me that their women staff executive were far more determined than some of their male staff they have. So once they're given an opportunity to demonstrate what they can do, I think there's no question about their abilities to do that. And you begin to see, I'm told, a number of women who head up these committees too, not only just chief of staff, but also in committee as well.
Beyond just productivity and efficiency, what else do women in Congress bring?
I think they bring a sensitivity. I think that sensitivity not only comes from just being a woman, but also some instances of being a mother, being a sister. We bring some sexy, but we bring a more caring attitude. And also, I'll say in my own instance, I brought a more matured and determined and confident that I could handle things. I think they bring a sense of I can fix it. Now, that may be a little misplaced around this institution, but I still think having that in that attitude is still better than I can't fix it. You bring a willingness, an openness, that it's not impossible. You bring a willingness, an openness, that it's not impossible. We bring a sense of the possibility. We bring a sense of hope. We bring a sense of, you can't tell me what to do. I'm here and I got as much right as you have. And I think the larger number of women who come, I think men also are accepting that. And I actually think men accept that. I think sometimes men in certain environments accept different. Men in separate environment may act differently in that. Men in their homes know how they accept their wives, right? And know, and then they come here and they act different. And even some of the men who come from corporate America where women are executives in that. So I think the more that we are here, the more men will act in the same way they do in private sector and within their families. And I also think there is change. I maybe there's hopefulness on my part, but I do see Agriculture Committee now has more women than they've ever had, huh? Both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrats on that area. So I think and I don't want to just say that agriculture is the worst committee, but I mean, I was pleased to serve on it. I'm very grateful, as I said earlier. But I do think that, for me, is an example that if men are becoming far more open in agriculture and rural areas, they're becoming far more open in all the other communities. So I think women, having women as to the democracy, as to the representation, as to the diversity of our society here, and it represents America.
I want to end this podcast by addressing the intersectionality between race and gender, and why our government should reflect the communities it is representing.
I think all of us who are of minority bring a representation of a sector of America that was not here. Please note the increased number of Hispanics and the large number, not large number, but certainly Asian Americans are here. So I think we bring a representation of that diversity. And to the extent that Afro-Americans haven't been, or to the extent Afro-Americans need an increased voice as a woman, Afro-American women are in society or in a unique role, and sometimes they're playing the only role as the provider in families. Many families are headed by Afro-American women. And they have special needs to be able to articulate what that means, but also to represent the strength of those women, because they are indeed providing for those families. We all also want to make sure that they have an equal opportunity in terms of employment and education. And I would say that I can't speak for Hispanic and Asian, but I respect the uniqueness of our culture, the uniqueness of our strength, the uniqueness of even our oppression. All of that needs to be a part of the dialogue and the debate. And to the extent we're here, we have obligation to articulate that.
In conclusion, Eva Clayton is a trailblazer and an icon that fits well into this course. Thank you for listening today. And I hope I adequately presented Congresswoman Eva Clayton as the leader she is.